This is a Suno India production, and you are listening to Climate Emergency. What you are hearing is the highest maximum temperature of Manali from 2005 to 2020. There has been an increase in temperature steadily, affecting the glacier's runoffs. One such glacier is Chota Shigri, which is in the Lahaul Spiti Valley of the Western Himalayas. This 9-kilometer-long glacier is an important water resource that supports the livelihood of people. According to the recent Hindu Kush Himalaya assessment, even if global warming is constrained to the most ambitious target of 1.5 degrees Celsius, according to the 2015 Paris Agreement, at least 30% of the permanent glacier cover in the Hindu Kush Himalayan region could melt down within this century, leaving behind 2 billion people in peril. Research and observations on glaciers and their behavior are very limited in India. In a recent paper published in the Journal of Glaciology, scientists have come up with new data that is straight from the glaciers. Such regional data, experts believe, could be more accurate and help us understand regional climate change and their impact on the glaciers. Hi, I'm Sharda Balasubramanian, and I'm here with the first part on climate change and Himalayan glaciers for Suno India's Climate Emergency Podcast. At Chota Shigri Glacier in Himachal Pradesh, scientists combined field data and satellite data to look at glacier health. Data from 20 years was analyzed to understand these impacts. However, scientists believe 20 years is not enough, and there's a need for a long-term monitoring of these glaciers to better understand their movements and behavior. Arindan Mandal, a researcher and the first author of this paper from New Delhi's Jawaharlal Nehru University's School of Environmental Sciences, works with a specific group that focuses on glaciers. He talks more about his work in the Himalayan glaciers.
My paper is based on almost 20 years of study in a glacier called Chota Shigri Glacier in the Himachal Pradesh. So this is one of the longest studied glacier in the entire Hindu Kush Himalayan region for many aspects of glacier and climate interaction. For example, glacier mass balance, which is, one of the best indicators of glacier health change over a particular time. Then glacier hydrology, then glacier ice velocity change, and many other aspects we have discussed in the new paper published in the Journal of Glaciology, which is one of the best in our field.
As experts say, glaciers are the best indicators of climate change, and they are directly related to climate. For instance, if there's any fluctuation in temperature or precipitation, glaciers are directly affected. Glaciologists globally often talk of mass wastage in glaciers. How much of glacier mass are we losing? And how less is the accumulation of the mass when there's a change in climate? This was analyzed in Chota Shigri Glacier. Mohammad Farooq Azam, a glaciologist and a professor at the Indian Institute of Technology in Kanpur, talks about the impact of climate on glaciers and how, in turn, that can impact water availability in the downstream Himalayan rivers.
In balance state, what is happening? If everything is balanced, climate is not changing, some precipitation is coming, glaciers are gaining their mass during winter, snow is falling, and they are providing water for irrigation, hydropower generation and all these things during summer.
When glaciers lose mass, there is an imbalance. There is less accumulation of mass. Hence, there is less water availability. This leads to sort of an imbalanced state. And in future, we may not have enough water during summer. The seasonality of the water flowing from the Himalayan rivers is important for certain crops. And based on this water availability, these specific crops are sown in northern India. Looking at this glacier helped in understanding the future impacts on water availability. Arindhan explains why this glacier was looked upon as a benchmark glacier.
I mean, benchmark we call it based on the, I mean, data set availability. I mean, in the Himalayas, you have more than 30,000 glaciers, I mean, different sizes. And you have hardly 30 of them studied so far. So in the entire Himalayas, so out of all those 30, this Chotanagiri glacier has the longest data set in every aspect. You take mass balance, you take hydrology data, or you take any other kind of glacier study, chemistry or anything. So that's one of the basic parameters for this benchmark glaciers. From this data availability perspective, another perspective is that all the big glaciers or all of the glaciers you cannot study because of a lot of manpower needed, rugged terrain, etc. Chotanagiri is one of the best glaciers, we call it, because its size is, I mean, almost 15 kilometers square, which is okay, fine. Some scientists can cover all the area to study. Then the elevation gradient is almost 1,000 meters from top to bottom. That is also okay, fine. Everybody can access its parts. For example, in Siachen, you have 3,000 of gradient. Glacier starts at 3,000 and ends at 6,000. So the gradient is very high. You can't access all the parts of the glacier. So this glacier has most of these features are quite perfect to study for a scientist or for a group of scientists. So these are two perspectives for calling it as a benchmark glacier. In 2002, there was a big program from UNESCO in this glacier because in the Himalayas, there are no data in the earlier time. So, a lot of worldwide scientists have come together and to strengthen the glaciology and the glacier studies in the Indian region or in the surrounding subcontinent, they have started a big program. So, that was happened in this Chotanagiri glacier because of this glacier accessibility and many types of good features in the glacier. Right. So from that time, the glacier is considered as benchmark and we have continued the studies from that time only.
So can you explain the relationship between glacier health and climate change, like, and how is in this particular, with reference to Chotanagiri glacier?
Principal objective is this mass loss, and which is called as mass balance. The mass balance is basically simple. It's a balance of input and output. The input, you can say the snowfall, which develops the glacier ice and snow. And the output is glacier water, which is flowing out from the glacier. If you sum these two components, you get the balance, which is the simple mass balance. Okay. If the balance is positive, then mass is gaining, the glacier is in good health or advancing. If water gone out more than input, the glacier is going negative in balance. The glacier health is deteriorating. Another important topic is the glacier surface ice velocity. See, glaciers, we call a glacier when there is a particular amount of ice is there in a valley and it moves downwards so that gravity. So the glacier flows to the downstream. So generally, when you have good mass or enough mass, the glacier will flow. When you have don't enough mass, there will be mass loss. The glacier will reduce its velocity. So we found in this glacier in last almost 20 years that surface velocity has decreased almost 25% to 40%. So this is a clear indication of glacier mass loss. Simultaneously, you have almost 0.5 meter water equivalent of ice loss every year. If you compare these two, you can easily see that the glacier is deteriorating the health. I mean, mass balance is also losing. The glacier ice velocity has also reduced. So if you connect these two, you get the clear picture. I mean, you have many perspectives to see that glaciers are really behaving to the climate change.
Scientists say that both glaciology and hydrology go hand in hand when it comes to water resources. These glacier studies are crucial to understand what is happening on the ground. The reason for this is as simple as the fact that we have thousands of glaciers and it is practically impossible to look at each one of them. When only modeling is used without any field data, it could probably be far from reality and perhaps misleading too. Precisely why this study is much more significant. Because it incorporates data straight from the field. This paper also showed all the data and ensured it was available in public domain so that researchers could use it to improve their models.
And you also mentioned about use of satellite imagery, right, for this particular study. So how has it like contributed to getting more significant information, or has that changed the way you do research, or how has that contributed to understanding better understanding of this glacier?
So the contribution of satellite research is also important. Because, for instance, if we cannot go in some particular time, like in September 2018, there was a big snowstorm in the valley and we all were stuck in Manali. And we, in fact, missed our expedition because of, snow, it was not accessible. We reached somehow, but we could not perform anything because the situation was very bad. So in that case, satellite helps us to fill that data.
Satellite data is more accurate if you're observing for 10 years or looking at seasonal data. For instance, this will show the variation seasonally or annually. Scientists take 10-year data from satellites and data from the field, compare and assimilate them to generate all possible accuracy in mass balance data. Also, scientists say that this is not a long enough time to estimate if precipitation is actually increasing or decreasing. However, what they say is, by looking at more data, if this melting occurs, there will be glacier mass loss, and this will impact the future river runoff. And this runoff is crucial for people dependent on these rivers for irrigation or their livelihood.
And they are saying that this glacier loss will increase the runoff for a particular time, for 2040s or 2050s, you will have a peak discharge, very high discharge because of very high melting. But going to 2070s or 60s, you will have reduced discharge because area will be very less and the glacier area will be no longer giving the enough amount of water to the downstream rivers. So the peak time of this discharge is, in our scientific language, we call it peak water. So, as many of the studies predicted that in the Himalayas, this peak discharge will be around 2040s or 2050s, and in around 2060s or 2070s, you will have a quite low amount of water in the rivers, and then slowly the water finish. So far, they have predicted, but these all are model studies. We need more, ground data set or in-situ data sets to strengthen these statements. Absolutely. And that's what we are doing in JNU.
Their studies also indicate that glaciers are not going to vanish soon. Arindam said that the Himalayas is responding just as similar to any other glacier in the world. And it's not a very extraordinary or alarming situation as of now. Here's another challenge, though. For collecting this very data from the field was not an easy task. With the tough Himalayan conditions of trekking on ice, facing flash floods and unseen calamities due to non-accessibility, collecting data was indeed difficult. Arindam talks more.
You have a lot of challenges on the glacier when you have not many people. So for example, in 2015, me and two of our students and four of the helpers were hiking up to the glacier accumulation, glacier highest point for measurements. And we had faced a big crevasse on the glacier. One of our helpers was leading the team. We were roped up in the mountain. And what we saw is just like the first who was leading, he just fell down into the crevasse. We know some of the mountain training or mountain, rescue things, we somehow, I mean, rescued him by the rope. But when we go to see the, I mean, depth of the crevasse, oh my God, it was super, I mean, super deep, more than 100 to 100 meters, very dangerous to see that day. We could not, I mean, perform our field work anymore because of a lot of traumatized condition. I mean, these are many challenges we need to face.
The challenges of data collection in the Himalayas is indeed daunting. The scientists, however, say that this data will push the research forward. And how? Arindan says more.
We have almost 30,000 glaciers, even more in the Himalayas. And mm-hmm. we studied hardly 30, which represents less than 1% of the total area of the Himalayan glaciers. So that itself shows that we need to study more, especially in the field. So like, for example, in Chotashikri, this glacier mm-hmm. is only almost 15 kilometers square. In the Himalayas, we have 40,000 square kilometers of glaciers. So that's negligible. So we need to study more, maybe bigger glaciers, but we need more numbers. We need more numbers, we need more understanding from different parts. So we should take maybe a glacier, maybe all institutions who are working, they all should take one glacier each and they study them in field to strengthen all these conclusions, at least in the India or Himalayan region. I mean, all the institutions should come together. Then they should select some glaciers in different regions, different climatic regions, and they should have an overall understanding how to study these glaciers. That's what we are doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, government is doing, institutions are doing. For example, if you take the example of Nepal, this ISMOD organization has done a great job. They have, I mean, called a lot of good scientists from the world, and they have studied few of the Nepalese glaciers in different regions, like east, west, everywhere near the Everest. And now they have very good understanding. Really, they have very good understanding. Maybe in India, we are lacking that. Like in Chotashikri, we have published a big data set and a big understanding. This will help a lot. This will give the motivation to take more glacier studies.
If you are able to generate data on this, on you know when we look at water discharge and you know and how it's going to impact people living downstream, do you think you'll be able to? I mean, is there a sort of any solution or anything that we can advocate on? I mean, is this something as a scientist that you would propose?
As of my point of view, we can't stop it. Maybe reduce it by taking a lot of governmental measures. For example, you see in Himachal, you have a lot of tourism industry. Big. These tourists don't even bother about the climate, about the vehicle emission, about the plastics, many things. So if you control these things a bit, maybe you have some, I mean, reflection after 20 or 30 years in the glacier. Maybe you have less melt. You have heard this, I mean, lake outburst and all. So those are also big concerns. So you can just prepare yourself that you just move out from that area, but you cannot stop them maybe. You can reduce their magnitude maybe little, but you can't stop anymore. It's I mean, whatever we have done. So we just need to look for a less maybe vehicular emissions, maybe less pollution. Mm-hmm. Maybe then the glaciers will be happy a bit.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Climate Emergency. You can listen to all the episodes on our website, sunoindia.in, or on any other podcast platform of your choice. If you like this podcast, we also recommend you to check the Suno India Show, our regular news show with in-detailed reporting on current affairs. Suno India shines a spotlight on underrepresented and underreported stories using audio as a medium. We rely on you, our listener, to support our work and bring out these stories. So please support us by visiting the contribute page on our website,